Peter B. Collins, News and Comment, on Wednesday, June 20th. It's a showdown in Washington, D.C. The Republican-controlled House Government Oversight Committee voted along party lines entirely, 23-17, to recommend a contempt citation against Attorney General Eric Holder. I already have contempt for Eric Holder, but it's not about Fast and Furious, and if you're a regular listener here, you know it's about his failure to prosecute clear criminal behavior on Wall Street, in the Bush administration, at Guantanamo, and just the general way that Holder has operated the Justice Department, holding on to many Bush loyalists who should have been forced out on day one. And now this Fast and Furious case has come to a head. And fundamentally, this originated under the Bush administration. It was a sting operation where marked guns were sold to Mexican drug cartels, and they were trying to figure out where the guns would go. And unfortunately, they found out when two of them showed up at a crime scene where a Border Patrol agent was killed. And this has become quite a focus of Daryl Issa, the Carl Arm millionaire, maybe billionaire, who chairs this committee. And I have very split feelings about this. I was listening to my friend Norman Goldman in the car just an hour ago, making the case that the attack on Holder is race-based because he's black. I don't buy that. There is a cover-up here, and today the president invoked executive privilege on really shaky grounds, because executive privilege is nominally about keeping White House communications private. And he has opened up a new can of worms as they attempt to cover up whatever it is they don't want to become public. And this move of invoking executive privilege was described by one commentator as bold. Obama is bold. Well, if Obama were bold, we'd have Wall Street executives behind bars. Angelo Mozilla of Countrywide Financial would have had to give back millions of dollars and should be at a country club with bars. And the list goes on. This president has been anything but bold. And now he circles the proverbial wagons in ways that can only inspire doubt. And there's a lot of posturing by both Democrats and Republicans around this issue. But here's a statement from the super-tanned Speaker of the House, John Boehner of Ohio. I know I'm loath to quote John Boehner, but he has a point here that has to be honestly approached. The White House decision to invoke executive privilege implies that White House officials were either involved in the Fast and Furious operation or the cover-up that followed. The administration has always insisted that wasn't the case. Were they lying? Or are they now bending the law to hide the truth? Presidents have invoked executive privilege 24 times since Ronald Reagan took office. George W. Bush used it 6 times. Bill Clinton, on his sex crime defense, used it 14 times. This is the first invocation by Obama, and it remains to be seen just how much of a firestorm Republicans can create around this issue. In Egypt, former dictator Hosni Mubarak is on life support, and so is the hope for democracy in that country. The latest wrinkle is Egypt's election commission has decided to delay its final determination of who won the presidential runoff vote. And this just injects more doubt into whether the military rulers who were once loyal to Mubarak will ever relinquish power, particularly if the announced winner is Mohamed Morsi, the Islamic Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood candidate, and it appears that he got 52%, and his opponent got 51.5%. I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm sorry, that, as anybody can tell, equals more than 100%. Do they have Diebold machines in Egypt? At any rate, with Mubarak failing, and there are various accounts, he's on life support, he's actually dead, or he just fell in the bathroom. And I don't know what the truth is. We'll find out that soon enough. But the disposition of the election and the way that, 10 minutes after the polls closed, the army essentially performed a coup. They redefined the role of parliament, said they'll appoint people to write the new constitution, and essentially that the president will report to the generals. And that is a major realignment that no one expected, and it remains to be seen how that will play out. In Greece, it appears a new government will be formed today. Antonis Samaras, the leader of the New Democracy Party, was sworn in as prime minister. He was able to form a coalition with the Greek Socialist Party known as PASOK and the moderate democratic left. And so after weeks of no government and just a nation adrift, Greece is at least going through the motions of forming a government. Now, Samaras has pledged to honor most of the terms of the austerity program imposed by European bankers. He would like to renegotiate parts of it, but it doesn't appear that Germany will permit that. Maybe a little bit around the margins. But I think that Greece will remain highly volatile. And I would be surprised if at the end of this year, A, Greece is still a member of the European community and uses the euro, and B, that the European community, or at least the central currency there, the common currency, survives. Seems to me that there is little hope of either. In Pakistan, the Supreme Court there, which has fallen into low repute in recent weeks, has ruled against the prime minister and actually dismissed him. Now, the issue is that the court claims that he failed to investigate the president, Zardari, for corruption. Everybody knows Zardari's corrupt. He was Mr. 10% when his wife, Benazir Bhutto, was running the country. I have no knowledge of whether he is still pocketing 10%, but his history of corruption is very clear. And all of this political infighting in Pakistan once again empowers the generals who control the nuclear weapons and who also control the ISI, the intelligence group that feeds the Taliban, takes American money, and uses it against us. So the picture there is becoming less and less stable each day. Julian Assange is now holed up at the Ecuadorian embassy in central London. He moved there Tuesday night. He is seeking diplomatic immunity and political asylum in Ecuador. He, of course, has been fighting extradition to Sweden, and the top court in Britain has ordered him remanded to Sweden. So this is his last-ditch effort, and he is now a prisoner of the Ecuadorian embassy there in London because the local cops say that if he attempts to leave, he will be arrested and dispatched to Sweden. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I think his main objective is to avoid any route that could lead to ultimate extradition to the United States, where he might join Bradley Manning. Well, he couldn't actually join him in a military court-martial, but figuratively he might join him as an object of persecution by the Obama administration for leaking. In Afghanistan, you may recall a few months ago, American troops were accused of burning the Koran. It led to riots and very harsh reactions. And since then, there's been a spate of murders of American troops by Afghan troops who are supposed to be on the same team. And just today in eastern Afghanistan, a suicide bomber blew himself up, killing 3 Americans and I believe 15 Afghan troops. And The military investigation calls for administrative punishment but no criminal charges of 6 Army troops and 1 member of the Navy accused of burning the holy book of Islam. And back here in the United States, the Senate is close to final action on a farm bill that'll cost almost $1 trillion, and 80% of that is food stamp money. Now, they're planning to reduce food stamp spending by 10%. And while Republicans call Obama the food stamp president and deride him for the fact that 50 million Americans, 1 in 7, are now receiving food stamps, when they make that charge, it is lame of the Obama administration not to respond and say there are 50 frickin' million people on food stamps because the Republicans wrecked the economy and created huge unemployment that has devastated the middle and lower classes in this country. And food stamps are generally treated as some sort of entitlement or gift to poor people. And the truth is that food stamps represent a huge subsidy to agribusiness and food processors in this country. And they are used to subsidize a lot of crops and food products that otherwise wouldn't sell. They would become surplus. We'd also have a lot of hungry people who would be miserable and robbing grocery stores, perhaps. But when people get one-sided and talk about food stamps as an evil giveaway to the poorest in this country, it just pisses me off. And they never raise the issue of how much it is of government welfare, corporate welfare, for the food industry in this country. And the Farm Bill includes some improvements. They're basically trading subsidies that are paid to farmers not to grow crops for crop insurance. And depending on how all this is worded and works out, I certainly prefer crop insurance as a safety net for farmers who have a bad year than payment to people not to grow crops. So it'll be interesting to see what the final bill looks like and how much it actually costs, but this is a major battle underway. And, of course, it reflects the interest of smaller states who have more power in the Senate than they do in the House. And that's one of the reasons why it's such a contentious issue in this election year. And finally today, people are calling on Barack Obama to grant a pardon to Don Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, who has been a guest on this program many times. We have detailed his case. He was railroaded into federal prison by friends of Karl Rove in a clear conspiracy. The judge who presided over his case is deeply corrupt and remains on the bench, even though during the Bush years, as he prosecuted Governor Siegelman, he was a major owner of a defense contractor that raked in hundreds of millions of dollars in federal contracts. The conflicts there are just so deep. The prosecutor was married to a former business partner of Karl Rove. The evidence that was used was rehearsed and subject to a lot of manipulation. And it just from beginning to end is an exercise in injustice. So I support this effort. Governor Siegelman is not commenting on this, but clearly it is a way out for him after the Supreme Court declined to review his case. And I support the call for a pardon. I don't have much hope that the man of hope and change will actually pardon Governor Siegelman. He has been extremely stingy with pardons since he took office, and there is no indication that he would risk political capital in an election year to free a Democrat that his administration has actually called for a longer sentence for. So I consider it to be a spit into the wind. But for Governor Siegelman, I would spit right into the wind and absorb the damage if it would win him a pardon. Hey, thanks for listening to today's news and comment. Drop by my website, peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.